My feelings about this are constantly evolving. I struggle with this.
We are not yet equal as a community. We're not yet equal as Americans. And to tell people, well, you know, I'm basically playing political games with your right to get married and someday I may come along. He's not going to say he's for it. Well, I don't think people are going to accept this, you know, cutting the baby in half.
Well, good heavens, Becky Giroux, your guest really gets around. There he is on Hardball.
Yeah. Hello, everybody. It is the Rebecca Giroux Show. Thanks for tuning in. Tonight, we got John Aravosis, editor at America Blog, political activist, something of a controversial figure from time to time. And we got him tonight. We're going to be talking politics. We're talking Democrats. We're talking LGBT media. We're going to be getting into it. We're very excited, glad he was able to join us tonight, and we're really looking forward to it. I actually had a chance to speak to John yesterday on the phone, and I know we're going to have a really good conversation today. Thank you again for tuning in. And in the meantime, when we get started, a couple things happening in the news this week. Connecticut. Governor Dan Malloy signed the Connecticut bill. It is going to be law as of October 1st in the state of Connecticut. Transgender people will be protected against discrimination. Yeah. Knock off another one for the good guys. You know, I mean, isn't it interesting that, you know, how many states are more progressive than, those bastions of liberalism like New York and Massachusetts, who still can't seem to get their shit together to protect everyone. You know, I mean, I have to tell you, I've said it a million times on this show. I am fully and completely and honestly and wholeheartedly a supporter of gay marriage. But I don't believe that when you have a state where gay people can get married and are protected on the job and are protected in housing, but trans people can still be fired and thrown out of their homes just because they're trans, well, you can call that a lot of things, but one thing you can't call it is equality. It's just not. It bothers me. You know, everybody seems to be, you saw this in New York, you've seen it in Massachusetts and other states, where they're marching under the banner of marriage equality. Well, marriage equality is a fiction. Unless you have both, you can't be equal. Equal means equal. Equal means everyone has the same. And in the state of New York, that's not true. You don't have equality. Maybe in New York City and a handful of other jurisdictions that have taken it upon themselves. But when you have a governor and an administration and a legislature that dole out civil rights with an eyedropper to the wealthy and those who can afford to pay for them, well, that's not equality, ladies and gentlemen, boys, girls, everyone else. It's just not. Same thing goes for Massachusetts. You know, when you hand out civil rights with an eyedropper to the politically convenient and you deny them to those who can't afford to pay for them, well, you know, there's a lot of things you can call that. You can call it marriage parity. You can call it the right to marry. But you can't call it equality because it's not. Because any married trans person, their marriage is never going to be equal to a gay person's marriage, because when you are establishing a family where the breadwinner can be fired from their job or where your family can be thrown out of their home just because your boss or your landlord decides that they don't like transgender people, well, that's not equality, folks. It's just not. And so we're going to be getting into those kind of topics. We're going to talk to John Aravosis. Now, I should say, John Aravosis, long history with the Democratic Party, political consultant. And yeah, okay, he said some stuff that pissed off some people, including me. And, you know, I called him out on this back in 2007 when he made those comments. That's not where we're going tonight. It's not where we're going tonight. Okay, just as with my interview with Michael Cole Schwartz, we didn't spend the time talking about what happened 5, 6, 7 years ago, because that wasn't the point. The point is about talking about what are we doing today? What about the situation now? In those days, there was a real question as to whether or not a transgender inclusive ENDA would be what the Congress went with. That question has been resolved. We no longer have to ask that question. And that's thanks to trans people and our allies getting out there, getting loud, getting proud, showing up at HRC events, showing up at political events and saying, this is unacceptable. And so you don't even hear Barney Frank talking about that kind of thing anymore. You don't hear Barney Frank talking about a non-inclusive ENDA. Maybe he'd like it, but he also knows it's politically unacceptable because it's going to hurt Democrats. Because if they tried to pull that crap again, we'd be right out there. We'd be showing up at their events, and we'd be calling them things like what they were called. I forget which San Francisco politician said it, but one of them at the event that took place in San Francisco protesting their gala that was actually larger than the gala itself, called them human rights cowards. They don't want to hear that stuff anymore because that's what it is. When you say these people over here should have rights, but it's okay to deny those people over their rights, well, that's what it is. It's human rights cowardice. And that's what the people in the Massachusetts legislature are. That's what the people in the New York legislature are. I mean, give me a break. The bill didn't even come out of the Senate. They wouldn't even get it out of the Senate. Okay, did you hear a word, a peep from Governor Pago Cuomo about it? No. He's all about that. He's all in favor when he's running for election. It's just like what Democrats do, just like what Obama did to us. He's all about, you know, trans rights when he's running for election, when he's stumping for your vote. But then once he's in office, he don't want to know you because you don't have the cold hard cash to pay up. You can't afford to purchase your civil rights from the Democratic Party. It's all about money, boys and girls, and everyone else. It's what it's about. I mean, read the articles. You know, why did they get as many Republicans on board as they did? Because they promised them financial support in the next election. I mean, that's what it's about. How much justice can you afford? And I don't know about you, but to me, that's not what America is supposed to be about. It just isn't. And so, it bothers me. And of course, we're going to get into a lot of these topics with John Aravosis coming up at the bottom of the hour. Another thing I wanted to mention tonight, we've got a new transgender civil rights organization. I don't know. Did I mention this last week on the show? I don't even remember.
I don't remember that. I don't think you did.
Did I know? Okay. Well, we've got Gender Rights Maryland, okay, which is headed up by Dana Beyer, friend of the show. She's been on a few times. She's leading this organization along with another woman whose name I can't remember off the top of my head, and I'm looking for it in the story, and unfortunately, it's apparently not in the story. And, of course, I picked the story that doesn't have her name. But anyway, Dana Beyer is in charge, and of course, part of the impetus for that was Chrissy Polis and the colossal failure, and I do mean failure, of Equality Maryland. You know, they not only failed on the gay marriage bill, but they failed on the transgender rights bill. Just, you know, very poor, poor advocacy. And I think... And you know, I'm going to ask Dana, probably hopefully soon, Within the next few weeks, I want to have her on again. It seems like she's on all the time, but I would like to have her on again to talk about this new organization, why they created it. I mean, it's pretty obvious why, because, you know, the gay and lesbian organization, the Equality Rights Maryland, isn't getting the job done. They're not even getting the job done on same-sex marriage, much less our bill. And it becomes quite clear that when, you know, once again, when you rely on a gay and lesbian organization to advocate for transgender people, they're going to throw you under the bus the minute you get in the way of their pet issue, which is, of course, is gay marriage. You know, I mean, we're getting thrown under the bus in Massachusetts, and they've had marriage for, what is it, 7 or 8 years now. New York, I mean, same thing. You see it over and over. Now, of course, Connecticut, thankfully, got that done. But fortunately, there's a governor who doesn't, you know, take basically politically legally sanctioned bribes in order to advocate for these things. So apparently, you know, they got it, and, you know, they have a good guy. You know, elections do have consequences, everybody. They do. And I think that, you know, those who live in New York, when these folks come up for election next year and a couple of years after that, I think they should be reminded of their failure. Okay, when you have a guy like Thomas Duane, who, when back in 2002, was our strongest advocate, the third time that gender came up for a vote, he couldn't even be bothered to show up for the hearing in New York. I think he needs to get the message. He was too busy rah-rahing for gay marriage to bother with gender. You know, never made it out of committee. It didn't make it out of committee because Democrats in New York didn't bother to fight for it. They were too busy sucking up all the media attention and all the celebrity that comes with gay marriage. And in that, I also not only include their state legislators, but even the people who we should be able to depend on. Christine Quinn, Speaker of the New York City Council. Where was she? Well, she was too busy rah-rahing for gay marriage to be bothered with us. You know, it's a disgrace. It's a disgrace. Okay? Because anybody who tries to tell you that people being able to marry is more important than people being able to keep a roof over their heads and feed themselves is a liar and a bigot. Yeah. I'll say it. Okay? If you think that your marriage is more important than someone else's right to put food on the table and keep them out of homelessness, then you're a bigot. It's that simple. People have to be able to eat. They have to be able to have a warm place to sleep at night. And that is not more important than your right to be able to get married. And let's not forget that even before New York passed gay marriage, gay marriages performed in other states were still recognized by the state of New York. So you can still be gay married as a gay couple in New York and have those rights recognized. You just couldn't do it within the state boundaries. But somehow that was more important than a family headed by a transgender person, that family's right to not be fired from their job just because of who they are. It was more important than not be thrown out on the street by their landlord just because of who they are? Really? Is that the kind of people we are? Is that what America is really all about? I don't think so. I really don't. And what kind of message does it send when what you see is people who are saying, we're going to take care of the wealthy and we're going to kick the poor and disenfranchised under the bus for the fourth time in the last 10 years? What does that say about your values? And what should we say when these people come to us in next year with their hands out saying, support us? Phone bank for me. Donate to my campaign. Is that the kind of politics that we as a community should be supporting? Is that the kind of people we really consider leaders? Because if it is, what the hell are we doing? Don't we deserve political leaders who stand up for everyone instead of just the politically convenient, who don't have to be bribed with campaign donations in order to do the right thing? I thought that was what Republicans did. I thought Democrats were supposed to be better than that. I mean, am I crazy here? I mean, that's what we see. That's what we see. People are too busy worrying about two wealthy, rich, you know, gay people getting married in the state so they don't have to travel, you know, they don't have to get in their car and travel to another state in order to be married. But somehow saving New Yorker, gay New Yorkers a trip out of state is more important than making sure that people don't die of starvation and homelessness. Is that really where our priorities are? I mean, even worse, Barack Obama. I mean, here's a guy who campaigned on passing the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. He hasn't mentioned it for at least a year. When he came out with his pride proclamation, couldn't even be bothered to touch on the concept of workplace rights. Couldn't be bothered. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, new chair of the DNC, she couldn't be bothered either. Why? Well, you know, it's politically inconvenient for Democrats. There's no money in it. There's no MSNBC FaceTime in it for them. So, you know, they tell you that they're fighting for you, but in reality, what they're fighting for is their own power and privilege. And it's important to remember that. It's important to remember that Democrats, as a whole, and I'm not talking about specific individuals here because there are plenty of exceptions to this rule, but the Democratic Party as a whole is not on the side of the little guy. They're not on the side of the middle class. They're not on the side of the lower class. They're not on the side of working folks. They're on the side of their own campaign coffers and their own continued employment in Congress and in other elected positions. That's what they're on the side of. They're about what's best for Democrats, for themselves and their cronies. That's what they care about. Because if it wasn't true, then you'd see them fighting for what's right rather than what's profitable for the Democratic Party. Because that's what gay marriage is. It's profitable. It gets them lots of FaceTime. It gets them lots of donations to their campaigns. It's profit-making. It helps boost the coffers. Okay, but supporting rights for transgender people? Well, no, that's just simply morally correct. It's simply something that they've made a promise about that fits in with the values that they say they believe in, that they campaign on. So that can get thrown under the bus because, you know, after all, that's just, you know, stuff they say at election time. It's not like they actually believe this crap. You know, and so I say, with an election coming up next year, I think it's time to call them out and say, you either believe that everyone should be treated equally and you're willing to fight for that, or we're going to replace you with someone who will. I really think it's time. I think it's talking about running third-party candidates and start doing it, because it's pretty obvious to me, as it should be to you, that the Democratic Party isn't doing, they're not keeping their promises. They figure that it's convenient. Who else are you going to vote for? Republicans? You know, they figure we'll vote for them anyway. It doesn't matter if they actually keep their promises because they'll still get our money and our votes. Because, of course, the alternative is unspeakably horrible, right? Well, you know what? Maybe it's time we started making some alternatives. Maybe it's time that we started saying, you know what? There is a third option. It doesn't have to be every single Democrat. But maybe if we start doing what the Tea Party did, which is start throwing conservatives out with the regular conservatives who weren't conservative enough for these people and started, you know, getting them out of office, like Bob Bennett from Utah and other people who weren't sufficiently right wing. Maybe if we start saying, you know what, you're not sufficiently left-wing, you're not sufficiently in the legislating in concert with the values that you campaigned on, with the values that you asked on my vote, you know, if you can't do that, if you can't keep your promise, well, then you're entitled to our support. And I think that's exactly what we have to do. And maybe we don't have to do it. You know, I mean, I'm not saying let's damage the party. I'm saying let's make a few examples. You know, oh, and I just got a little message here from John Aravosis. He asked me, I'm going to tell him that, Mike, you will call him at the appropriate hour.
Sure. Well, at about 27 minutes after, John.
Yeah. Okay. And I don't know if he's listening, but I'm about to send him an email.
Hello.
And, John, we will have Mike will call you. And I'm just typing him a quick email.
Lovely.
We'll call you in about... well, say 10 minutes.
Okay.
Okay, 10 minutes, because we'll go to a break, and then we'll have them on.
Actually, it'll be a little sooner than that. More okay. Like well, 6, 7 minutes, yeah. All of
okay.
This goes on
I
the...
just, I, okay, and let's see. Oh.
Hello.
Oh, that's very, very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Where there's actually a discussion going on the Bellerico Project about John. You know, I posted a promo for the show.
Yeah.
And there was somebody who called him an a-hole in the comments. And well, John actually commented back. I just got the email. You know, yes, sometimes I can be an a-hole. But putting that aside for a moment, I was already one of the top online activists and gay activists in the country long before I started my blog. Blogging is just a tool. And I happen to agree wholeheartedly with that statement.
Okay.
He's exactly right. And frankly, that's one of the reasons why I wanted him on the show. Because this is a guy who knows the Democratic Party. He knows the issues that we're facing. He knows how these people operate. And that is why he is a valuable, his perspective is valuable and useful. I mean, has anybody ever wondered, you know, I get crap like this all the time. I got the same kind of crap when we had Michael Cole Schwartz. And, you know, I say to people who are Rachel Maddow fans, have you ever noticed how Rachel Maddow always wants to have Republicans on her show? Why do you think that is? Do you think that's because she wants to fight with Republicans? No, because having different perspectives, and including perspectives that aren't shared by the majority of your audience, is useful and valuable. And the truth is, though, with John, you know what? One thing, and I said this to him on the phone yesterday, was I said, you know, we're aligned in a lot more ways than people would really think. You know, a lot of people are upset with him because of this one thing that he said in 2007, which I grant you, you know, I was right out there calling him out for it too. But, you know, that was 2007. It was nearly 5 years ago. The world is different now. Politics are different now. American politics are different now. It's a different situation, okay? In those days, we had George Bush in office. There was nothing going to get passed because nothing was going to escape a Bush veto. Now we have a president who says, get it to my desk and we'll sign it. So now the problem isn't the president. The problem is Congress. The problem is the cowardice of Democrats. That's the real problem. The problem is a president who doesn't want to, who wants to rah-rah and make promises when he's running for office, but doesn't want to dig in and do the hard work of keeping those promises once he's already in office. Now, what I'm hoping, of course, is that he's just being cautious. He wants a second term. And so he figures, and his administration figures, well, if we don't, if he comes out in favor of ENDA and stuff like that before the next election, that he may risk votes. Personally, I think that's nonsense. I think that the country has long since evolved past that. I mean, you know, 2002, the Human Rights Campaign did a study, and even back then, and this study was conducted, I should point out, in North Carolina, even back then, 61% thought that transgender people should have workplace rights, okay? So you know that the number was higher for gay people, okay? And, you know, the other thing that I think the whole gay marriage argument, and we're not going to get too much into this gay marriage versus you know, we're not going to really go there with John because that's not really why I want to have him on. We have plenty of other stuff to talk about.
Sorry about that.
Okay. But where I just wanted to finish this thought and then we can go to a break and you can bring John on. But the point I wanted to make was, oh, God, I went off on a tangent now, and you completely confused me with that music there.
I'm so sorry. Butterfingers.
Right. But the point is that we've already gotten past that, and then we're going to, you know, we've gotten past that point. And I think the fact that the Democrats are still running scared from this shows you how trapped in the DC bubble, how completely out of touch they are with average Americans. And I think that goes for Obama. I think it goes for Senate. I think it goes for the House. Okay, now, of course, we know right now the House ain't going anywhere. We know this. Okay, but the point was they could have passed it. And that is something we will get into with John Aravosis in just a couple of minutes. So, Mr. Mike, why don't you go to a song?
Oh, I think we had a little taste of that. We love Toshi Regan on this show, on our little Cowtown radio program. She is amazing. And this one is unreleased, but it will be on our next CD. It's called Terrify Me, and it's from Becky and Mike. Here we go.
See you in a couple.
Just in the news everywhere I look. Hey, you're trying to terrify me. Basing your crimes on the words of the good book, Lord, you try to terrify me. This land is yours and it belongs to no other. You're trying to terrify me. And when you got no allegiance, say you rob your own mother. Word, you try to terrify me. West, East, and South, you're trying to terrify me. Well, I go higher, 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 higher.
He publishes two of the best blogs in the business, America Blog and America Blog Gay. He's John Aravosis, and he's Becky Giroux's guest coming up next.
Your children and grandchildren are being re-educated in public schools to accept the gay lifestyle as normal. Warning, they are being taught that the traditional family is not normal.
This nation needs a national awakening. And I believe Dr. Michael Brown's book will cause that awakening in America.
Don't miss out on getting Dr. Michael Brown's book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, and his powerful audio CD message, Holy Desperation. Both yours for a donation of $30.
I was gambling in Havana. I took a little risk. Send lawyers, guns, and money. Dad, get me out of this. Ha!
Hey, all right. Hi, everybody. We are back, and we've got John Aravosis on the line. Hi, John. How you doing?
Hey, Becky. Doing well.
Good. Well, thanks for joining us. I really appreciate you coming on. I wanted to start with really the big issue that's on a lot of people's minds, with the economy being what it is and jobs for LGBT people, which, of course, is workplace rights.
Right.
Despite, you know, a multitude of promises from President Obama and the Democratic congressional leadership that they take on the Employment Non-Discrimination Act and pass it, if they won both control of both houses of Congress in 2008, and despite knowing that they had enough votes to pass the bill during the last Congress, what we actually saw was, during the 111th, was Democrats run away from a confrontation with Republicans over that bill, and instead they took up and passed Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And what I wanted to ask you was, does it make sense to you, with the economy and job prospects being what they are, for the Democrats really to focus on what's really a tiny fraction of 1% of the LGBT American workforce, which is employed by the federal government, and ignore the rights of a vastly larger constituency working in the private sector?
A lot of questions within
well,
that one
yeah,
question.
I figured we'd start off and I just, you know, let you run
yeah,
with
no,
it.
No, that's okay. That's okay. But I think there are some assumptions built in that I don't necessarily know if they're true, such as, I'm not totally convinced the Democrats set the agenda, meaning had we left it to the Democrats, I don't think they would have done Don't Ask, Don't Tell, DOMA, or ANDA. They haven't done DOMA, but they wouldn't have even stopped defending DOMA, you know, the administration. And you and I sort of talked about this offline a bit, and I'm happy to talk about it online. I kind of feel as if the community ended up, to some degree, forcing Don't Ask, Don't Tell and making it rise above everything else. And not the whole community, obviously. I mean, I know you've got some concerns about that. But I don't think the Democrats are really willing to do anything until people started bitching more and more about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and it started getting sort of more complaints in the community than anything else. So it sort of started becoming the issue that everyone was focusing on.
Well, along those lines, do you think that the media play that was getting, you know, Dan Choi on the Rachel Maddow show coming out and people chaining themselves to the White House fence and getting lots and lots of coverage, was that a factor there, do you think?
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. I mean, there's so many reasons, I think, as to why Don't Ask, Don't Tell sort of rose to the top and why ENDA didn't go anywhere, and honestly, DOMA didn't really go anywhere either. I mean, my dog's going to be playing with a toy in the background at some point here, so deal with that, I guess. But, you know, DOMA, there's some movement, and it looks now like actually, you know, some of what they did last week, you know, filing this brief against DOMA might actually have larger repercussions. But, you know, the Dan Choi thing was huge. That was part of the larger Get Equal effort, which was huge. And you had just a lot of people across the, you know, the community sort of griping about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. You had Victor Fehrenbach, even before Dan Choi, was sort of the, you know, the balding guy or bald guy. I don't know what he was, mid-30s or whatever, who was on Rachel Maddow like a year ago or so the first time. I mean, you on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, you had a lot of sort of victims popping up in the news because Don't Ask, Don't Tell per se, they kicked out. I don't remember now. I'm making this up. Whether it's 700 a year, I don't even remember now. You know, but you had the Obama administration kicking out practically a service member or two a day, which it was instant news right there. You know, it would be like on ENDA, if we had a victim a day that we could show people, that would help ENDA a lot. For example, you know, and on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, we had everyday people popping up. We had people like Choi. Well, first of all, these guys and women being in their uniforms doesn't hurt. You know, because Americans. Mm-hmm. Fall for that. It looks, you know, so patriotic and everything. That helps. You know, Dan being willing to handcuff himself to the White House and be pretty outrageous didn't hurt either. You know, that you had some people who were really willing to put their neck out. And I mean, for a lot of other reasons, but I just feel like everything sort of came together to help Don't Ask, Don't Tell get in the news, to make it sexy for the media and to make it embarrassing for the politicians. You know, I mean, not to sort of give the answer to the entire hour discussion here in one question, but I feel like on ENDA, we're missing a lot of the pieces we need to try to convince politicians, the media, and everybody else that it actually matters.
Right.
I think it does matter.
You know, I want to play a quick clip. This is a clip from Barney Frank's senior aide, Diego Sanchez, who's a trans man. And he was talking about ENDA and why it didn't pass. Mike, can you run that clip?
Number one, the thing that breaks my heart the most is that we did have the votes this time. And it didn't come up because of two things primarily. One is health care, which took so much longer. And number two, is the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the thinking that it needed to go on with the defense bill. And so that when it came up, it went. Both Congressman Barney Frank and Tammy Baldwin do believe, and we know because we counted, we believe we had the votes this past Congress, and we ran out of time. So the short answer is the calendar. But this time we actually had the votes with even some Republican surprises to pass a fully inclusive ENDA bill.
And I guess, you know, when I hear something like that, my question is, and I've been asking this on the air a lot, is, you know, when you hear about this, should the LGBT community be endorsing this kind of behavior from congressional Democrats with our support and our donations, you know, or should we be standing strong and refuse to endorse a political party that makes these promises to our community at election time? And then, as far as we can tell, has no intention of keeping them once they already have our money and our votes.
You know, it's a hard question because, I mean, again, I'm not sure exactly what you're asking about endorsing them because, for example, you know, I may not be supporting a primary challenger against Obama yet, but I would very much agree with the premise that you've got to keep the heat on these guys. I mean, I've sort of used the phrase beating the bejesus out of Obama on gay stuff from the beginning. And a lot of people get ticked at me for doing it because they're big Obama fans. And I was a big Obama fan too. I supported him in the primary, you know, and got beaten up by Hillary supporters for it. But what we learned was you've got to keep holding his feet to the fire or he won't do stuff. And we saw the same thing with Capitol Hill. I mean, back and forth between the Hill and Obama on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, but it's the same thing with any issue. They kept sort of throwing it back and forth, kind of blaming it on the other one of why they weren't moving forward. And we were like, what are you talking about? And even Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I mean, the calendar, please. I mean, they didn't get to it until December of last year, you know, in the very final days, you know. So, I mean, and it was because the administration put it off until the end anyway because of the study and all this BS. Is it Diego or the guy from Barney's office?
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
when he talks about health care reform, you know, again, I think people should hold the Democrats responsible because, you know what, it's not our fault the way the health care reform went. I mean, a lot of us said the president was sitting out for a good year and not doing anything. And no wonder it dragged on for a year because he let it drag on for a year. No, I mean, I think the Democrats are responsible. I think we should have gotten much more than just Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I think it's unfair of anyone to even say that, oh, we could have, which kind of Barney's guy was insinuating, like it was Don't Ask, Don't Tell or DOMA or ENDA. You know, we had heard a rumor about I don't even know when now, a year or two ago, whatever it was, that, you know, a very large gay rights group, let's put it at that, had been told by the administration that, you know, you get Don't Ask, Don't Tell or, and I don't know if they said or ENDA or if they said or ENDA or DOMA, whichever, but like you can get one or the other, but you can't get both. And, you know, and forget the third. And the third must have been DOMA. It had to be, because they didn't want to touch DOMA. It had to be Don't Ask, Don't Tell, or End at the time, I'm thinking now. And I don't know what the answer was, but we were told that statement was made. And, you know, as time went on, it sure was, it wasn't looking like either one anybody wanted. But I think it's bogus to take an excuse as to why they didn't do more. And I think even on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, we had to beat the crap out of them to get them to move forward.
Right, you know, exactly. So let me ask you just to, like, you know, put a finer point on it here. What exactly do you think went wrong here? Was it Democrats just chickening out, didn't want to take on the Republicans? We've been hearing, for example, several people have said to me that it was the trans issue in ENDA that was
ENDA?
The real problem here.
You know, there's two issues. One is just our stuff across the board, you name it. Whether it's ENDA, DOMA, Don't Ask, Don't Tell, or anything else. Okay, that's the first problem. I think Joe Sudbe, who writes with me on the blog, who's my deputy on the blog, calls it political homophobia. And it's basically, you know, even people who are our allies, quote unquote, who have endorsed, you know, the right issues, when they say, oh, yeah, I'm going to vote for X, Y, and Z, that when push comes to shove, they really don't want to bring our stuff up because they've got this bizarre fear that our issues are going to doom them, even though the polls are crazily in our favor. You know, and he calls it political homophobia because it's sort of this irrational fear. And I think a lot of that comes from, whether it's the 1990s or before, politicians still think it's the early 1990s. You know, America hates all of us, and if you dare help us, you'll go to hell. You know, whereas on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, it was a lot of work, but we won. We even got extra votes. We had two Republicans we didn't even expect all of a sudden in the Senate voted for it. And John McCain was still able, they broke the filibuster, but after you break a filibuster, you still can have like another 20 hours or so of debate until the vote comes up. McCain didn't require them to have the 20 hours of debate. The Republicans basically didn't want to touch Don't Ask, Don't Tell after we broke the filibuster. I mean, they wanted it to go away, the debate.
Yeah.
You know, so but I think the first big problem is these guys don't want to touch our issues, period, because they think we're toxic, even though you know, we're invited to their dinners or they're invited to our dinners, and we all get invited to the – I don't get invited, of course, but other people get invited to the White House. You know, for the
don't feel bad. I don't get invited
else.
Either. So.
You know? So I think that's the first problem. DOMA specifically and Joe did more of the talking to folks on the Hill about this than I did, but – I know, you know, more than once we were told the hang up on DOMA, and at least, well, actually the Senate, I think probably, was the trans issue, but we were never able to get more than that. And one thing that I think was kind of disturbing, and again, you and I sort of talked about this the other day ourselves, I kind of feel like people didn't even want to say that. Like, they didn't even want to sort of discuss, okay, what? Okay, if trans issues are causing the problem, then what exactly? You know, I mean, is it the bathroom question or whatever? Great. Well, then let's have it out and discuss it, you know?
Right.
But by not even knowing what the problem was, it couldn't even be addressed.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, obviously we got another election coming up next year. There's always another election coming up. And it seems pretty likely so far, at least looking at the Republican field, that Obama's going to win a second term. And there's at least a fair to middling chance, or good chance maybe, that the Democrats will retake the House. If assuming that happens, what should the LGBT community be doing to help ensure that, you know, this doesn't happen again, that we don't get seven promises in a row from George Miller to introduce ENDA, which never materialized?
Right. I mean, first of all, there is some concern of Obama not winning again, and you're starting to hear a little bit more of talk of that. We'll see. I think he's still ahead, but there's some concern. There's also some growing concern about us not keeping the House, about it going Republican. I mean, excuse me, the Senate, about it going Republican. So, you know, the elections aren't set at all as to what's going to happen next year. I do think we go back to square one, where if we get the House back, we hold the presidency and we hold the Senate, and now we have Democrats controlling everything, how we don't have them start all over again and say, oh, yeah, well, we'll get to your, you know, we just won back the House. We don't want to start, you know, all this stuff the first year.
Yeah.
You know, that would just be too much. And then we have some crazy issue like health care or something else come up, and they spend a year doing it because, of course, the president won't want to get involved until it's too late. So it'll drag out for a year, and then they'll tell us, well, that took a really long time, so we can't get your guys' stuff. And it's an election year the year after because the House is every 2 years, and, you know, and on and on and on. Honestly, they can. First of all, I think we need to get them to make a concrete promise, such as, yeah, if you come back into office that first year, you're doing ENDA or whatever. That would be the first thing. I think when they don't keep the promises, you know, you go teabagger on them in the sense that, you know, all those Tea Party crazies went to the public meetings and they yelled at the politicians about health care, and you know what? It scared the heck out of the Democrats. You know, yeah. It really did. It was a lot of it, I think, was fake. You know, there were people who were set up to do this, but
sure.
Boy, it scared them. And again, this is where the Dan Choi thing fits in. You know, Robin McGehee at Get Equal and Dan, among others, they were willing to, you know, not just go to the White House and get arrested and all of that, which was embarrassing, to the president, but when that sort of the Get Equal group kept going and yelling down Obama at the fundraisers he was doing. Oh,
yeah.
he was livid. I mean, they were able to get right in the president's face and tick him off. And I think after about the third time they did it, you know, you better believe the president sat there. Well, actually, we know now because Mark Ambinder, who's a writer with, I want to say, I always forget if he's Atlantic or what. I mean, he's jumping around. But it's somebody who tends to channel the White House's thinking, said that after one of the times that Get Equal shouted him down, the president got into his limo and basically turned to his staffers and said, what the hell is going on? Why did he keep yelling at me? I suspect it helped. I suspect it helped to put a little fire under him to get him to do more on Don't Tell, at least. So I think people need to start thinking with more of an ACT UP mentality, you know, or a Get Equal mentality, as to, because I do not think politicians act unless they think, you know, you're going to get them if they don't.
Let me ask you another question. Do you think that if Obama does win a second term, and once he no longer has to worry about being reelected, do you think he's going to do things like, for example, evolve on gay marriage and come out in favor, strongly actually use the bully pulpit to stump for ENDA and those kind of things, and maybe immigration reform and those kind of things?
I think he'll probably come out for marriage. I don't think he's going to stump for anything. He doesn't stump for stuff. We've seen that. You know, if anything, he kind of, you know, says something, doesn't really stick to it, and then splits the baby in half when it's too late and we all go, huh? And he, you know, gives away too much. So, ironically, the marriage thing is almost the easiest for him in a way. Because all he has to do is say what his position was in 96, which is, okay, yeah, I'm in favor of it. And then that's it. You know, I think it has legal consequences and everything else, which is great. But I think it's almost too easy for him in a way. You know, what we need him to do is to actually do the hard work of pushing Congress, and not just pushing Congress, but I would say even using the agencies, and, you know, start helping us develop all the information we can about discrimination on, you know, well, not employment, but everything else as well. I'd say not just, you know, not just on ENDA, frankly, you know, a gay rights, or not even a gay rights, I mean, an LGBT rights bill, omnibus bill, you know, covering, like, everything, public accommodations, everything else, too. You know, but the agencies could be a big help in that. And the president could start highlighting cases himself. He could invite people to the White House who have been discriminated against. I mean, there's a lot he can do. And I think he almost relies, and frankly the Congress does too, they rely on people not understanding how Washington works. So they think, well, no, he promised he was going to help us, and he did mention us in that one speech. What more can he do? He doesn't feel, he's not a congressman. He can't pass legislation. And we had... you know, Democratic people in town sort of say that to us and try to get that out to the community so people would get mad at those of us who were trying to hold the president accountable because, like, we're just crazy people. You know, how could you expect the president to help on any of these issues? He can't legislate. And it was because we've been doing this for 20 years and we've been seeing other presidents who weigh in, and guess what? I mean, George Bush, Jesus, certainly at the beginning of his term, it's as if the Republican Congress didn't even exist. He just said what he wanted and they'd vote for it. And the Democrats would vote for it. I mean, the president has incredible sway and persuasion if he wants to use it and if he uses it wisely. The problem is, I don't think the president uses his powers wisely, so that he's watered them down a lot at this point.
Right.
You know,
okay.
One of
the other issues, one of the problems that we, especially in the transgender community, have to deal with all the time is what seems to be a lack of interest, or at the very least, a lack of willingness on the part of the national, who we're talking about, and state LGBT civil rights organizations to invest time and money in fighting for ENDA and workplace rights. And a lot of them are instead opting to focus a lot on same-sex marriage. And I was wondering if you had an idea of what you think the problem is here, given that, like, in 29 states, you could still be fired for just for being gay, not to mention the 35 right. where you could still be fired for being trans. Why do you think there hasn't been more of an effort at the federal level and at the state level to pass these endotype bills and or some other kind of workable solution to the issue of workplace rights?
You know, I don't necessarily know the state level as well as far as sort of what's been going on in the states, because I focus much more on the national level. I think this gets us back to some degree what we were talking about a little bit earlier, which is, you know, ENDA and hate crimes were the huge deal of the 1990s. You know, I mean, I started working on these issues in 93. Ironically, volunteering for Ted Kennedy while I was working for Ted Stevens, who was a Republican senator. You know, I was a Republican back then, and I was actually volunteering in Kennedy's office on the fly, working on ENDA and a bunch of other issues. And, I mean, I actually wrote Cheryl Somerville's testimony back then, who was the woman who was fired from Cracker Barrel for being a lesbian. And I actually wrote on her dismissal form, you know, fired for being a lesbian. I mean, it was crazy. And, you know, and back then, ENDA was huge in the 90s, and then hate crimes became huge because of the Matthew Shepard murder, which was, I think, 98, right? You get into the 2000s, and all of a sudden, hate crime starts being not less important, because obviously hate crimes matter and the legislation was important. Okay, obviously. But you didn't see the hate crimes bill pass a couple years ago and the community, you know, raise up in joy and say, oh, there's nothing else the Congress needs to do for us or the president because we finally got the bill. They kind of yawned when the hate crimes bill passed. And I think to some degree it's because it was a very big deal in the 90s, but other issues became bigger, you know, recently. Same thing with ENDA. Huge issue in the 90s. In the 2000s, civil unions started popping up around, well, I guess earlier, because we even had Hawaii where all that was being debated in 96, but certainly, you know, the Howard Dean endorsing civil unions in Vermont in 2000 or 99 or whenever it was, and we went from that being controversial, like, oh, could Dean actually run for president having endorsed civil unions? Oh, my God. To, you know, now civil unions is like the passé, you know, position that even George Bush in 2004 kind of said he didn't really care. Marriage, I think, sort of soared onto the scene, and Don't Ask, Don't Tell kind of was always in the news, but I think with Obama, it was such a contradiction that a Democratic president who was Mr. Hope and Change and, you know, the new generation was still kicking out gays and lesbians in this case. It made it newsworthy, and it made it obvious for people. You know, it's the difference between people are starving in Africa when you don't know about it, and there's some huge famine, and it gets on the news, and then everybody pays attention and gives $1 billion. You know, somehow marriage and Don't Ask, Don't Tell just became bigger and bigger, I think, in a lot of the community's eyes, and ENDA just started not being on people's minds. It was hate crimes. I don't know why that leads me
to my next question, which was one of the things, and I've mentioned this on the show before, when I attended as press a recent HRC gala in New York, there was a Governor Cuomo had a representative there, and he mentioned that the governor at that time, of course, was going to fight for gay marriage, which got a huge cheer in the room, and then he also mentioned gender, and you could have heard a pin drop in the room. Nobody seemed to care. And what I'm wondering is, do you believe that part of the problem, and we talked about this off air the other day, do you believe that part of the problem is not that folks who work with, for example, the Human Rights Campaign and other similar organizations are antagonistic towards fighting for workplace rights in particular, but they're just that these folks are generally, they're gainfully employed, they're pretty well off financially, and they just don't have these kind of concerns, and they don't see fighting for workplace equality as an important issue personally?
You know, I'm trying to sort of think this through, because it's hard to know. I mean, I think to some degree, people tend to focus more on issues that affect them directly, meaning, you know, in the past, I don't know if it's been true anymore, but I remember in the 90s, HRC had a whole, you know, one of their top things they worked on was breast cancer. And I remember at the time thinking, oh, that's weird. You know, how is that a gay, lesbian, bi, trans, or any other issue? You know, breast cancer. Oh, my dog's barking at me in the background or whining to make me play with her. You know, but how is that a gay issue or any other issue? And somebody explained to me, well, actually, you know, lesbians, or at least at that time, tended to not have children, certainly by natural childbirth, compared to, you know, straight women. And apparently somehow that impacts your hormones and makes you more prone, or certainly more prone, I guess, to get breast cancer. That's a really bad explanation, but it's something like that. And I said, okay, well, that's interesting. I had no idea. Okay, fair enough. But I'll bet you if, you know, somebody had mentioned breast cancer at an HRC event, you would have had all the lesbians cheering, and the gay men probably would have clapped, but they would have done what I did, which is, oh, okay, you know, because it doesn't really affect them personally, so they're not against it, you know, but they, unless they knew somebody who was sick with it, they, or, you know, their mom or something, they probably wouldn't get too emotional about it. And I think you've got some of that going on, which is a more benign thing than antagonism, but I think you probably have some gay people who, it's not their direct issue, like you said, you know, in the same way that breast cancer might not get some guys jumping to their feet. Now, is it a good thing that they're not jumping to their feet? No. But I do think there's some of that, and maybe that fits into a larger category of, you know, I don't know if it's trying to educate the community more, you know, because I don't think, I think in small, I don't know, maybe even in small towns, I was talking to a friend about this today, it's possible in small towns, gays and lesbians, for example, may have more experience knowing trans people than in cities, even to some degree, I wonder. You know, yeah, I was talking to friends today.
You may well be right. I wanted to shift gears a little bit here. You're the editor of America Blog, which, of course, is one of the top progressive political blogs in the country. And in the past, you and your contributors have written a lot on LGBT politics and political advocacy, some of which has generated a little bit of controversy in political and LGBT advocacy circles. How do you think that those of us who create LGBT-relevant online media and our audiences can best help, to get our addresses, get our issues addressed in the political arena?
Well, again, what do you mean more specifically? I mean, are you saying sort of get more trans issues out there in the news or what? Like, specifically, what do you mean?
Yeah. I mean, how do we use the media reach that we have to get our message out in, you know, beyond? That's one of the things that's always been a frustration for me personally is I have an audience and, you know, I have readers, I have listeners, but, you know, they're all basically within the community. And, you know, expanding beyond that is always been tough because, you know, we're community media, and it's tough for somebody who's involved with community media to expand beyond the community. And do you have any ideas on how we break through that wall?
Yes. To some degree, yes. I mean, one interesting thing with, you know, I started doing gay rights advocacy, so to speak, because that's what it was called back then, like in 1993. You know, late 90s got involved with sort of the Matthew Shepard murder and a couple other big things that became very, obviously, big national news, but my involvement became sort of very national as well. And, you had asked something that got me, I'm going to forget what I was going to say. You were saying something that made me think of this as far as the first part of your question. About how to get the message out there. One thing that was bothering me was just that, is I felt like in each of these things, a lot of times I was speaking to a gay audience, which was fine, but I wanted to sort of speak to straight people too. You know, and one of the things we did on purpose when I started America Blog was starting it, my dog is growling, somebody relax, was writing basically a national politics blog that had a very strong, you know, gay interest or whatever you want to call it. You know, Andy Toll calls his blog, I don't know if he says like a culture blog with homosexual tendencies or whatever. You know, so the idea was to have more gay content than Daily Coast, which is another big blog, might have, but still be about national politics. And it was just sort of and I remember one of the things that made me think of this was Jack Nichols, who was very famous. I mean, it's funny, I didn't even realize to what degree he was involved in gay history, but had died just a few years ago. And Jack had befriended me because he was helping us when we were going after Dr. Laura Schlesinger in 2000 and, you know, a bunch of other campaigns, helping advertise it on his site that was called, I think, Bad Puppy or something like that. It's basically a gay porn site, right, for guys. And he would help us publicize our stuff. And I was like, well, how are you going to publicize our campaign about Dr. Laura on a porn site? He was like, oh, no, we've got Gay Today, which is our like, politics section. And he goes, it's great because the boys come to look at the porn, but then they also kind of look at the politics a little bit, and it's our way of, you know, making sure they're politically active and educated. And in a funny way, that was sort of my thought initially with starting the blog was, you know, having it be about U.S. politics across the board, but having a very healthy dose of gay politics thrown in. You know, so that our straight readers would be a little more educated than they might be on another blog. I mean, again, if you had the right people to do it, you certainly could do the same kind of thing on trans issues. You know, trying to sort of get them involved in some larger blog or whatever it is that because, you know, you guys are very, well, I mean, you, obviously you especially, on, you know, you're very involved in Bolerico, for example. But it's a gay blog or an LGBT blog. Right. I'm not knocking that because I like Bill who runs it, you know, but I mean, like you said, to get to an outside audience, it's a little harder. I think you've, you know, but, and I don't know your community in terms of the political organizations or the activists very well, so it's hard for me to sort of say what you're missing or whatever, but I do think, you know, for example, I don't get a lot of interesting trans stories sent to me for my blog. We just don't. People don't send them. You know, occasionally we get a hate crime thing, but that's about it. But it's not like people actually send us tips that also send us trans stuff. We just don't get it. I also don't get a lot of stuff from the environmental community and some of the other women's community too, for example. You know, it almost seems like people are in their own little cone and not sort of reaching out more across, even within the LGBT community. Do you want to jump in?
And one of the problems that everybody who I've interviewed and asked why ENDA failed in last Congress, they gave all kinds of reasons, like, you know, the timing, the calendar, the health care, all these different issues. But one thing that everybody agreed on was that we didn't get any media coverage in the mainstream. We didn't get on MSNBC or on Maddow or any of these politically, even other progressively oriented political media. I mean, of course, non-LGBT, you know, and what I'm wondering is, you know, can we do, I mean, one of the reasons why same-sex marriage got the kind of mainstream media it did was because it's so well-funded. And, you know, we saw, at least here in the I live in New Jersey, so I live in the New York City television viewing area, we had commercials on gay marriage every day. How, when you don't have that kind of financial resource to draw upon, how do you get these issues into mainstream media? You know, that's what I'm wondering.
You need victims and you need sympathetic victims for starters. Okay, don't ask, don't tell. We kept having these people in beautiful military uniforms that were, you know, risking their life for their country getting kicked out. That was a very compelling story. On marriage, you know, we have these beautiful couples that have been together for 40 years and they're 80 years old wanting to get married. That's a very beautiful. And then when they got, remember San Francisco, you know, back in 2004, I think it was, that, you know, all these, everybody's so excited and these beautiful pictures of people in their tuxes. And it was a very, we had, well, again, victims. In this case, they weren't victims because they won, but same concept. There were individuals being affected that you actually could see who they were, and they were sympathetic. You know, you went, oh my God, what a beautiful, they aren't people burning down buildings. They're actually, you know, nice people in tuxedos getting married or whatever. On ENDA, you know, the groups need to find us some prominent victims that are of the Dan Choi variety. You know, we need somebody who's been fired. It doesn't have to be a male. I'm just saying that Dan really embodied something the TV liked. You know, that we need somebody who it's, you know, it's an egregious firing and it's something that just, you know, stinks in the nasals of the nose of the gods, as my law school professor used to say. Matthew Shepard was certainly that example on hate crimes. Even though the bill didn't pass, it certainly got the concept of the bill really galvanized. You know, but I don't think we have that on ENDA. I've not seen, and we don't have a steady flow of it either. Not only do we not have one really good case, but we don't have, you know, a steady flow of good cases that we hear about and go, yeah, wow, you know, it's happening again. Our groups, I think, are just, again, they're sort of failing us because part of the problem here, and I think the president also thinks this way and it's wrong, you don't often win these things by deciding, you know, next month we're going to pass the bill. You win it by the way the religious right tries to win things with, you know, spending a decade or two just constantly bringing up the issue until people get so used to it or whatever that it ends up passing, you know, where you build support for it. And marriage has been certainly going on in a big way since at least, Hawaii, which I think was 1996, you know, with civil unions or marriage, whatever it was back then. Mm-hmm. But the story kept popping up in the news. You had Evan Wolfson, who was the Lambda Legal, I guess, marriage guy, and, you know, now has been on his own with, I forget the name of his group now, but he's sort of the big marriage guy in the community who's been pushing this for 20 years. And, you know, you had, well, just that, you had Evan pushing this at every turn. So you had an activist who was just spending time hitting on this when nobody else wanted to. You also had, whether it was Evan or other people, filing lawsuits, again, going back 10 or 15 years, so that you had the lawsuits popping up in the news as well. And they kept popping up and popping up and popping up, which helped us make news. It helped galvanize the community. It helped tick off the community against the public. Like in Obama's case, it helped tick people off if he wasn't on the right side of the lawsuit. You know, so I mean, it gave us a lot of different ways of bringing the issues up, right? On ENDA, for me, it's very frustrating as a blogger because I sit here and people are like, you know, why aren't you writing more about, you know, ENDA or even the UASA, right? People who have got, gay people in this case, I guess, who have a partner from abroad. They're married, but, you know, obviously they're not really married, right? Because the federal government doesn't recognize it, so their partner ends up getting deported, or they just can't live here. And they would say to me, well, why aren't you writing more about it? And I'm like, well, send me some stories about it. What do you want me to write? You know, people already know we support it. But I was like, send me news articles. Send me something going on. You know, send me some tragic stories. Well, now you're starting, because of the DOMA and the marriage issue, you're starting to see more media coverage of gay couples being split because one partner's from abroad. But that took until, hell, I'd say maybe even 6 months ago, that now we're finally seeing some of those stories pop up. But before that, people would complain, and they'd be like, get me some news to write about. I can only write so many times. I'm really for this on the blog. You know what I mean? It isn't interesting or newsworthy. There's nothing new about me saying it again.
And I want to remind everybody, they are listening to the Rebecca Jarreau Show. We're talking to John Aravosis. And I'll just hit you with one more question, John. Thank you for staying on so long with us, by the way. If you had one good piece of advice for trans and allied activists as far as making sure we and our issues get the attention from the Obama administration and the Democrats in Congress that they deserve, what do you think that would be?
I think you absolutely have got to hold Democrats' feet to the fire and the president's feet to the fire. You know, I do think the trans community may be further behind politically than the gay community, for example. I don't think that's probably a big shock to you, but you know, meaning that politicians are probably a little more willing to do the gay stuff than the trans stuff. For example, getting a trans appointee, and I forget what agency it was such a huge deal, right? A year or two ago with Obama.
Yeah.
Obviously, had he just picked a gay guy for the job, it wouldn't have been – well, actually, Obama would have bragged about it, but the rest of us would have said, yeah, that's nice. Bill Clinton did that 20 years ago, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, but I think that means that your community is a little further behind politically, and part of what you guys have to figure out is, yes, it's a big deal if you get a trans person appointed to something, but how do you get something more? You know, I mean, Obama's done some things that are, I don't want to be totally anti-Obama. You know, he also included trans in the non-discrimination executive order, I believe, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. But what more can you get the president to do? Okay, first of all, you know, what, ENDA isn't going anywhere with the Republican House. So what can you get the president to do on ENDA? We've been talking a lot about this, Get Equal has been, and I think everybody has, trying to get the president to pass this, to sign this executive order on ENDA, which basically says that federal contractors, you know, people who suck at the federal teeth, so to speak, have to have non-discrimination policies that cover lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. And would be a huge deal, hugely impactful, is almost like doing an ENDA anyway because so many businesses, take federal contracts. That would be huge, and it's something the president can do. But it means standing up a little more and getting in his face because the groups won't do it. And, I mean, you have the same problem we do in that regard, I think. The groups just aren't as in your face as the activists are. I think to some degree, but I mean, I also, I don't know, I mean, I wish I knew more about sort of your community specifically to tell you what more you could do. I mean, I don't want to sort of talk too long here, but one story that was interesting to me, and maybe you can tell me why we didn't get more support, but a month or two ago, Tennessee, everybody knows about Tennessee trying to pass this don't say gay law, that teachers wouldn't be allowed to say the word gay, and I'm sure trans was included too, you know, in grade schools or whatever it was. Well, at the same time, they were also passing a law that was going to repeal a gay and trans rights ordinance in Nashville and ban any ordinances in the future. Well, Joe and I with the blog jumped on it because we were like, what the hell is this? And if this thing passes, it's the perfect template for the religious right to use around the country to repeal any kind of municipal civil rights ordinances, right? Well, we had a hell of a time trying to get anybody to pay attention to this damn thing. I mean, national groups didn't get involved. You know, local activists were involved, God bless them, in Tennessee. But nationally, there weren't any groups involved. Not a trans group, not really. HRC finally got involved because we kind of blew the issue up. But but it was really frustrating. You know what I mean? And again, like I said, even the national trans groups, it's not like they sort of called and said, "Oh my God, yeah, what can we do?" Because actually, not just did it repeal a gay and trans, it was actually the same law, the same thing we want the president to do. It was talking about contracts with the city. You know, they would have to have the protections. Apparently, and I didn't even know this until some trans person on Twitter wrote me, the law also, I think it wrote into law that you cannot change the gender on your birth certificate, ever.
Yes.
Yeah. And yes. I didn't even know that. I mean, I didn't know that.
And I think part of the problem was we didn't get any media attention, any mainstream media attention. And part of the problem, and I actually wrote about this at the Bellerico Project, was that one of the companies, which you reported on America Blog, one of the companies that was on the board of the Tennessee Chamber of Commerce, which lobbied really hard for this bill, was Comcast, which is one of the parent companies of MSNBC. And, you know, it wasn't until we started calling them out in online that all of a sudden they released a statement that said, oh, we support trans rights, we support gay LGBT rights, and that's not with our corporate culture. But in the meantime, they waited until the bill was already on the governor's desk
they
waiting to be signed
end.
Before they said a word.
Yeah. Most of these companies waited until the very end. But I mean, but I guess what I'm saying is that was an interesting case to me where pretty much the gay groups didn't care. I mean, HRC got involved, but you know, you never quite know what side HRC is playing, to be honest. You know, are they working with the corporations or are they beating up the corporations? You know what I mean? It's kind of like the problem GLAAD's had recently. And again, like I said, trans groups, there was nobody helping us at the national level. And Joe and I were basically coordinating the whole damn thing, and it ended up losing after about 5 days, but we blew it up pretty well and certainly freaked out a lot of these national companies. But, you know, it actually, and another problem, because there were no trans groups and HRC was the only gay group, what follow-up was there to do with these companies who at least got burned finally because they realized they really screwed up by supporting this law, which was good, you know, because we burned them in terms of the public eye. But there was nobody there to really work with them and say, okay, great. Well, you know, you burned our community. What are you going to do to make a difference? I'll bet you HRC had a lot of backroom things they told them they could do to make a difference, and you can guess what that would be, you know, to help HRC. But the gay community and the trans community across the board, if you had a national trans group that was strong and involved like this, they could have sat down with these companies and said, okay, here's what you're going to do. You know, you've got – well, some of them may not even have protections. Other than may have work pre-protections, but maybe they don't have training, you know, about harassment or whatever. I mean, there's just – I don't know what the answer is. I just think people need to be involved more, and I think in your own community, you guys have got to figure out who are the best activists, who are the smartest activists, who are the best spokespeople, you know, who looks best on TV, because honestly, it does matter. And even in our community, it's not like we choose. I mean, hell, a lot of the TV spokesmen in the last couple of years have been just people that sort of grew up on their own. I mean, whether it was Dan Savage, Signorelli, me, or others, you know what I mean? It was sort of activists who filled the void.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm not sure what the recipe is, but I do feel like it doesn't come from on top. I mean, you've got to figure out how to make it happen by pressuring the people who are in power, whether it's the Democrats or whether it's whoever your leadership is of your community, you know, as it is. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
I may not be a very detailed answer. I'm just not sure.
I totally agree with you. And I think, something has to happen organically, and it just hasn't happened yet. And I think part of that is because people aren't stepping up. And part of it is because, well, we don't have the resources that other segments of the community have to draw upon. And that's one of the reasons why I've said, you know, if we can get the workplace rights thing passed, we'd have more from what to draw on, I think.
Yes, but you can do it with blogging. I mean, the one thing I will say with online activism is – assuming you're in a job that is secure, put it that way, and that's a big if, as you just said, okay? But, you know, I was able to do a lot of my gay advocacy starting in, like, 98, which was the Matthew Shepard thing that I basically ran the website that was coordinating everything going on around Matthew Shepard's attack. I was able to do it because I was consulting on my own, right? So I could take time from my own consulting at home and work on it for free. Now, you know, who knows? I mean, you can get into all sorts of societal discussions of, is it because I'm a white man that I could do it? Who knows? But you've got to basically find or cultivate people who can take some time on their own, whether it means they're making enough money working on their own or whatever, that they can get involved in doing more advocacy. Because you don't need money to blow things up online. You don't. You need time. And that is money, so to speak, but it's your own personal money. You know what I mean? Meaning you're making enough money, you can afford to give up some of your clients, you know? And you're working at home, so your boss isn't going to fire you for spending all day doing an advocacy project. But that's all you need to blow things up online. And you, then you got to be smart and understand PR and know how to blow it up. But, I mean, you know, friends and I, we did, Dr. Laura, we all did for free. And we did it for a year. And, you know, we got that horrible woman off of TV. And Media Matters finally got her to quit radio altogether. But,
oh, yeah.
You know, but that was, I mean, that, again, it didn't cost money, but it did take people doing it who had their own careers, so they were able to take time and do it. So it wasn't a monetary cost. And we knew that if we were identified as gay on Fox News or whatever, I wasn't going to get fired because I was working for myself. And I had clients in D.C. who were liberal groups, so they didn't care. You know, so yes, you've got to find people with that kind of protection, but you don't need money to blow things up online. I say blow things up metaphorically, of course. You know, in the media, you just need somebody who's smart enough to know how to do it. I'm not saying just myself. It's a lot of people who are nowadays. But it's, you know, don't knock yourself or sort of think that, you know, you're not totally woe is me here. You know what I mean? Meaning, I think you guys could, can blow things up more, but you need to find some smart people who really know how to blow stuff up on blogs and everything else.
Absolutely. Hey, John, I want to thank you so much. You've really been an awesome guest and given us a lot of stuff to think about. And I hope you'll join us again.
Now you can take the calls of everybody getting mad at me while I'm gone, okay?
thank you so much. And again, I hope you'll come back and join us again because this was terrific.
No problem. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. So long now.
Thanks, John.
All right. Well, that was John Aravosis, editor of America Blog, political activist, gay man. And, you know, as I said at the top, sure, not everybody is his biggest fan. I was never his biggest fan. But, boy, wasn't that a great conversation? And I'll tell you, what he was saying there, I agree with 1,000%. We have to. Get some figureheads there. I mean, you know, the people we have some good people out there, but it's not enough. It's nowhere near enough, and we need some more media-friendly figures. We need some more interest on the part of the media. So much good stuff there. And, hey, Mr. Mike,
sure.
Why don't we take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk some more news and politics and stuff like that there.
And I'll give the phone number. We'd love to hear from you guys. 928-277-4921, 928-277-4921, or just Skype us. That's absolutely free at Q1 Studio. Q1 Studio. Here's Meg Hinches right now. Here she is.
Okay, see you in a couple.
Here's Meg.
At the bottom, just above the poor and pregnant, just below the future farmers. I could feel it, so I left it. I had 12 years to unload. I'm looking both ways. I'm crossing over the road.
This kind of love is good for you. This kind of love.
Crossing over the road.
This kind of love is good for you. This kind of love.
What was he saying? The pulpit when I was dozing in the pew. You know they hide in public restrooms like a monster underneath the bed. They will devour you.
Now, here's your Pentagon Channel report.
A federal appeals court is ordering the federal government to stop enforcing the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell law, banning gays and lesbians from serving openly in the military. The ruling by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals was announced late Wednesday. Pentagon officials say they will comply with the order and are taking immediate steps to inform commanders in the field. Congress passed and President Obama signed the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell last December.
Becky has decided to leave and go to the convenience store, which I'm sure is in the neighborhood someplace. Our monitor is strangely dark. I have no... Oh, there she is! Well, we're going to play a little more music anyway. This is called Stiff Something. What is it?
Stiff Little Fingers.
Stiff Little Fingers. Thank God it's only fingers. Oh, yes. If it bleeds, it leads here on the all-new Becky Giro Show. I think I'm actually misunderstanding what John Arabosis was giving us in advice. It's about perking things up, though.
Well, yeah. And I happen to agree with what he was saying, was that we have to do a better job of marketing ourselves.
All right.
We really do. Now, we did get a couple of tweets from Nelson, who is... writes NG blog. You can look that up. And I he said some stuff that I frankly don't agree with. He said, and I'm just going to read this as he wrote it, because I don't subscribe to this. He said, Arabosis certainly can talk the talk and walk the walk. Too bad he's a con man. I disagree with that. I mean, he's got his own opinions, don't we all? That doesn't mean he's a con man. It just means that he's not necessarily fully in concert with you or me or anyone else. That doesn't make him a con man. I mean, honestly. Okay. I say this as somebody who, when he said what he said in 2007, I called him out on it along with a lot of other people. Okay. I don't have to agree with every word that comes out of somebody's mouth in order to think that stuff that he says is useful, valuable. He was a terrific guest, very gracious with his and generous with his time. Nelson also says, if he were truly an ally, he wouldn't be exploiting the closet and equating people who were throngs at gay pride parades to NAMBLA? I don't recall.
What's the
making
basis of that comment?
I don't remember seeing.
I never heard that.
No, I don't recall ever hearing anything like that. Nelson, if you have a site, if you have an article or something that you can cite there, I'd appreciate it, because I have no idea what you're talking about there, to be honest with you. But again, I mean, just like as in the case of Michael Cole Schwartz, he's representing the Human Rights Campaign. I had him on because he had good stuff to say, not because I agree with every word that comes out of his mouth. Okay, just like, as we were talking about before the interview, Rachel Maddow has Rand Paul on her show, or other hardline Republicans who are willing to come on her show, you don't have to agree with somebody in order for them to have something useful and valuable for your listeners to hear. Because just because somebody doesn't agree with every point of your agenda, and to be honest with you, I didn't see really anywhere where John Aravosis didn't agree with our agenda. We may disagree sometimes on strategy. We may disagree on the roads that you take to get there. I mean, even with the Human Rights Campaign, it's not about goals. It's never been about what we want. That's never been the disagreement between the trans community and the Human Rights Campaign. What has always been the disagreement is, how do we get there? What should come first? Where should we invest our resources? That's always been the debate and the argument with the Human Rights Campaign. And, John, you noticed, I'm sure, is not exactly the biggest fan of the Human Rights Campaign either. I think they have a lot to prove. I've said this a number of times on the show. I'll say it again. I think, I like what I've been seeing this year. I thought that, and you know what, Mike, I know you have that Fred Sains clip, handy. Why don't you run that clip? This is from a show a couple of weeks ago where John Aravosis was on. He was on with, Fred Sains, and Ron Reagan Jr. And they were on Hardball. And here's something that Fred Sains said on that show.
I guess I would make two observations. The first is, I think that it's important to understand that marriage is not the only priority to the gay community. Far from it. In 29 states in this country, you could still be fired for your sexual orientation, and in 36 states for your gender identity. There are still a number of issues that we have as priority. Our kids are still bullied. There's still an awful lot of work to be done. Change has always come first and foremost in the states for gay and lesbian people. Issues of equality have always been advanced. So in that sense, we will see when hopefully New York joins it, the sixth state today to have marriage equality, and then a number of states will also follow. At the federal level, let's also not forget that, the so-called Defense of Marriage Act also has to be overturned. So I think that this president is tremendously popular among gay people for all of the hallmark changes, advancements that he has brought to our community.
Okay. The one thing that I take issue with Fred Sains on in that clip is the term marriage equality. I don't think that you can have such a thing. As I said at the top of the show, I don't believe there is such a thing as marriage equality when you have gay people being able to get married and trans people being fired and thrown out of their homes for being trans. I don't think the word equality is an applicable term when you have a situation like that. So using the term marriage equality, I think, is a misnomer. I think it's a falsehood. And, I'm sorry. I don't think that that's a credible term to use. I think you can use the term marriage, the right to marry. I think you could use marriage parity, maybe. But equality? No. Not as long as people are still being thrown out of their homes and fired just because of who they are. Equality is not a term that applies to that situation. And as long as New York still has that situation, That's what it's going to be. And you are listening to the Rebecca Giroux Show. That would be me. And we are here along with our esteemed producer, Mr. Mike Scott.
Hello.
And we are ranting away here. And we want to hear from you. We want you to call in. What did you think of what John Aravos has had to say? What do you think of what I've got to say? Give us a call, 928-277-4921. Give us a call. In fact, while I'm talking to you, I'll throw it onto Twitter here. I'll say, let's see, I'll say while I'm talking to you here on the microphone, call in now. And then I will use my handy-dandy copy device here on the thing. And
now, I wanted to explain that I have been trying to get into the Trans-FM chat room, and I know there are people there who would love to be communicating to us, and I haven't been able to do that. We've actually had a bit of a power failure, although it didn't take the show off the air. We've lost our second internet service, which runs some of the computers here in the studio. You know, Baleri, Baleri.
Oh, good old Baleri. Yes, we can always count on them to not be able to count on them.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, I just, if you got me on Twitter, it's Becky Giroux. I just posted the number, the call in number, 928-277-4921. Call in, tell me what you thought. I really thought he had some great stuff to say. I was, I thought it was a great interview. I really did. I thought he was terrific. Boy, can that guy talk. And that's always good because when you're a host and you have an interview like that, you can throw out a question and you can let the guy just go. And those are always the best, especially with a guy who, you know, you can agree, you can disagree, whatever, but he is damn smart, and he knows the Democratic Party as well as anybody.
I didn't know.
And that's really what we need.
I didn't know until he told us that he'd worked for Ted Stevens in Alaska.
Yeah,
amazing.
I didn't know that either. Yeah. And you know, he's so right when it comes to having. I think we need better spokespeople, people who are television and radio friendly. Trying to do a little bit of radio friendliness here on this show, I'm easy to find. Nobody's ringing my phone off the hook asking me to make appearances, and you know what? That's not surprising. I'm a spokesperson. I'm a mouthpiece. You know, I'm not a political figure. I don't want to be a political figure. That's not what I do. I'm a loudmouth. I blah blah blah. You know, I talk politics. I tell you what I think. Somebody wants me to share that on their show. I'm more than happy to do that. But I'd like to see, you know, because I'll tell you, we have certain people in this community who do a very good job. But we don't see them on TV very often. We don't hear them on the radio very often. And when we do, it's usually, you know, community radio, you know, people like Mara Kiesling, people like Allison Robinson, people like that. We need more people like that. People who represent organizations, people who... another one who I think is particularly good and we need to see more of in the media, Diego Sanchez. There are plenty, but what we need is for people who are willing to come out and willing to put themselves out there and say, here's what we think, here's what we need. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so glad, we got Dana Beyer, who's starting up Gender Rights Maryland. I think that's great. Okay. And I hope she's going to become more of a voice. I mean, she's been interviewed locally a lot of times. Don't see a lot of her in the national media. In fact, I don't recall ever seeing her in the national media. And there's also another part of it, too, though. And that is that we need the national media to be willing to cover these things. And we need them to be able to cover specifically the transgender community more in ways that are not like human interest. I mean, you know, the last time they did a real feature on trans people in the mainstream media that I can think of I mean, and I'm talking about serious feature. I'm not talking about, you know, Chrissy Polis and, you know, a couple of paragraphs about that. Okay, was remember the Susan Stanton feature that CNN did? It was a whole thing, you know. And what did they talk about? They talked about her as a human interest thing. They didn't talk about the politics. And that's the problem, is we don't get our issues discussed. And frankly, you know, I mean, people who have read me for a while, they know I don't think much of Susan Stanton, quite frankly. You know, anyone who can come out and say that they don't think that we're ready for equality is not somebody I take seriously as an activist.
Is Susan Stanton a teabag Republican? Sort of.
I don't know. Okay. You know, but I know she's a Republican. All and right. She's got this attitude, this elitist attitude, you know, oh, I just happen to be a woman. You know, she used the term, she said, oh, I see them as men in dresses. You know, I read that in the St. Petersburg Times back when. God. I was like, you know, fuck you. Who the fuck do you think you are? You go and change your gender, and then you turn around and you slur the rest of us like that? You know, and you know, the other thing that we need, and actually John and I were talking about this on the phone the other day, John Arvosis and I were talking about this, is we need some more FTMs, female-to-male people. And by that, I don't mean Chaz Bono, because, you know, he's getting a little bit of media attention. He's going on Jimmy Kimmel and these late-night shows. But again, he's not an activist. He's a political. He is, as I said last week, I think that Chaz Bono is to the transgender community what Sarah Palin is to the Republicans. You know, he's not a real serious activist. He's just a celebrity affiliated. And you know, he's not looking to be a spokesperson. He's looking to sell books. He's looking to make media appearances. That's what he's looking to do. He's looking to be a transgender celebrity, not a transgender spokesperson. Okay. And Sarah Palin, same thing. She wants her to be on TV. You know, I mean, this is a woman who couldn't even get through a single term as governor of Arizona. You know, and so I don't see her as particularly credible. Just like I won't say that I don't see Chaz Bono as credible, but he's credible as a media figure. He's not credible as an activist. At least I don't see him that way. I've mentioned this on the show previously. I invited him on the show. His management said that he didn't have time. I guess he was too busy talking to The Advocate and The Washington Blade to be bothered to talk to, you know, community media from the community he claims to want to represent, which to me is just, you know, I mean, I don't know what the word is for it. I don't want to use the word hypocrisy, but...
Yeah, there's that book deal coming up.
You know, there's... let's just say it doesn't impress me. it really, you know, and I'm not saying this to bash Chaz Bono. I'm sure he's a nice guy. I'm sure he's got the best intentions at heart. I'm sure he's supportive. But again, I don't think he's looking to be a spokesperson for this community. I think he's looking to sell books. I think he's looking to make media appearances. I think he's looking to get his own reality show or something like that. I mean, that's what he wants. He wants to be on TV and be an author and, you know, have cameras chasing him. He's not really interested in furthering the cause of transgender equality. And, well, I guess that's, you know, it's kind of disappointing, you know, because here's probably the most famous trans person in the country. And, you know, what's he doing with that fame? You know, we get better press from Lady Gaga, you know, I mean, and which is great. But, you know, if you're over 30, nobody knows who the hell she is. You know, I won't say that. That's going a bit far. But, you know, I mean, at least Lady Gaga, you know, walks the walk and doesn't just talk the talk. And, you know, I'm not saying this to bash Chaz Bono. I wish him the best of luck. I hope he's successful. You know, the more well-known he is and the more accepted he is in the media, maybe it'll open some doors for the rest of us. I can only hope. But at the same time, at this point, I have a lot of trouble taking him seriously as a spokesperson of this community. I would love it if he would convince me and others otherwise that, no, he's a serious activist. I would love to see that. I would love to see that. One of our listeners said that she missed the Aravosis interview. She was on a date. But I'm hoping that we're going to be able to get this out in pod form as soon as possible. We are going to have a slight delay.
And we will actually repeat the show in its entirety in about 30 minutes. Or less, actually. Let's see.
Okay, 20
minutes.
If you missed the interview, we will repeat the show at the top of the hour, about 5 minutes after the top of the hour. And it seems Nelson has just sent me a link. So let's see what Nelson's link is. I'm scanning this. This is an article from America Blog dated July 1st, America Blog Gay, titled, written by John Aravosis, A Touch of Homophobia from The Economist, which I hadn't seen. I know what this is. Okay. Basically, it's a picture in The Economist. It's talking about the gay marriage fight in New York, and they show a picture of these two guys who are together, and they're dressed up in probably the gayest outfits I think I've ever seen. Basically what John says here, I'll read a little bit of what he wrote. He said, was this photo really necessary, choosing the most outrageous photo, and it is pretty outrageous, to symbolize their gay coverage is something the American press, other than Fox News, stopped doing a good decade ago. Well, I don't know if I agree with that. I think there's plenty of American press that still indulges in this kind of crap. And if you throw the trans thing in, it times that by 100. He says, in this case, the story is about marriage, not men who feel the need to walk half naked in public. I would agree with that. And he says, it's hard to believe a magazine like The Economist, which I once wrote for as a stringer, would have the poor taste to publish that photo with the story. On the one hand, I agree with him that it's poor taste and all that. On the other hand, it doesn't surprise me at all, because this is what people who don't get us, that's what they see, you know, and that's how they see us. They see us as these stereotypes. And he also, John mentions, he says, I think the guy in the photo is a moron for dressing like that in public. I would tend to agree. Seriously, doesn't help the cause of marriage, not to mention who needs to see you in your thong anyway. But there's no excuse for The Economist choosing a sensational photo. And I agree with that. But, you know, I mean, this is what a lot of the mainstream media does. You know, you see a trans person, do they pick, Chaz Bono as a picture? No, they're going to pick, Lady Bunny and Head of Lettuce, you know, and that's what they put out there as a trans person, or RuPaul. I mean, honestly, you know, I'm sure Ru does quite well. Ru is a gay man who's trans for pay. You know, it's like, you know, you've heard of gay for pay. This is trans for pay. I mean, I've actually heard RuPaul say on the air on a TV show, it's like, oh, when I dress up, I get paid, honey. You know, it's a business for RuPaul, for him. You know, and that's what they see. That's the picture that you get when they're trying to present a picture that's representative of trans people, which is, I think, a lie, because I don't think somebody like RuPaul qualifies as a trans person. I think RuPaul is a gay man who's dressing up. You know, you could argue that drag is a form of trans, but not when you're talking about in the political sphere. Okay, because RuPaul is going to take off that dress and that outfit and go, you know, and go be a man when he's over. And that's not what politically, that's what we're about. Because let's be honest, and this is a question, and we got into this with Marty Abernathy a while back. But, you know, there's a difference between somebody who is a weekend warrior, somebody who is a cross-dresser, and that really is what drag queens are. They're cross-dressers, maybe extreme cross-dressers, but cross-dressers nonetheless. They identify as men. They're dressing as women, albeit caricatures of women, but, you know, and they're not, but they don't identify as women. They don't live as women. They present themselves as women. It's a performance art for them. That's not the same thing. I mean, that's performance. That is, you know, somebody goes on camera and is doing it to perform. That's not the same thing as going, living your life in a gender other than the one you were born to. And, you know, people who dress like this picture, which is, and I'll describe it to you, it's a picture of a guy who is dressed in, like, it looks like a tuxedo jacket and top hat with a thong and spats, and along with his partner, I guess, who's in this, like, weird white hat that looks like something out of, I don't know what, 1789, in a white jacket with a skinny tie and striped shorts. I mean, they look like idiots, quite frankly, you know. And I think John was right to call it out. It's they're idiots to be willing to be photographed like that. And The Economist is, you know, it's pretty lame for them to try to, you know, this is the kind of thing that we get from, you know, the National Organization for Marriage and, you know, people who, oh, they're coming for your children, you know, those people. You know, PFOX and crap like that. You know, this is the kind of thing, we don't expect this from, you know, serious journalists. And this just shows you what happens when people who don't get it, when people who may, not only don't get it, but make no effort to get it, try to write about our issues. They don't get it. They think that these people represent what being gay is about, just like they think that RuPaul represents what being transgender is about. And it's as much bullshit in that case as it is in this one. So, you know, I'll tell you, I don't see anything, and I don't know quite where NAMBLA comes into this. You know, I happen to think that John is right on this story. I agree with him. I agree with his point. I agree with what he wrote. You know, he issued an update, which is below the picture. He says, a Twitterer noted that The Economist has long supported gay marriage and even did a cover story on it. And that's great. I'm not trying to say they're a bunch of homophobes, but the choice of photo for this story was homophobic. It's a problem that we've had to deal with all the time in the States during the 1990s and before. It needs to never happen again. And again, I agree completely and wholeheartedly with John here. You know, there's a difference between antagonism and ignorance. And to me, that photo, now, who's to say, as everybody who is a writer knows, that a lot of times the writer does not choose the photo that goes along with the story. Just to give you an example, when I posted the promo for this show at the Bellerico Project, I didn't pick the picture of John Aravosis that went with the promo. One of the editors pulled it off his site and put it up there. And so that's, you know, I didn't, you know, and so when you're a writer, you don't always have that option. You don't always have that choice. So I would question who is doing their photo editing over at The Economist. And just because their photo editor doesn't get it, it doesn't necessarily follow that, that the writer, the editorial staff necessarily believes that. But I do think that they need to get their shit together. Like I say, just as when trans folks are represented unfairly by drag queens and you know, extreme photos, this is the same kind of thing. And it just goes to show you that we still have a long way to go, not just for trans folks, but for gay and lesbian folks as well. I mean, you know, there's still those same stereotypes, quite frankly, you know, that gay men are all mincing, effeminate kind of, you know, extremists. And trans people are all drag queens, and lesbians are all t-shirted, chain-swinging dykes. You know, all that stuff is still floating around. It may not be as commonly held a belief as it used to be, but those attitudes and those opinions and those stereotypes are still out there, and we still have to work to confront them. And I really believe that it's this kind of thing. When something like that appears in The Economist, that hurts us politically. Just like the same token as when we get the only thing that we get when Chrissy Polis is beaten in a McDonald's, beaten into a seizure, and every major media, just about, covered this and covered it respectfully and intelligently and well. The AP, UPI, Washington Post, it was well done, well documented, well covered. And then you get, Sean Hannity, who oddly enough was very respectful in the terms of he used proper pronouns for Chrissy Polis, discussed her on his show, and then used that to argue against hate crimes. Of course, he's an idiot because, you know what? Done deal. It's already law. Too late. You know, his bullshit argument, it's so funny because he's such a fucking hypocrite, this guy. Okay? Here's a guy who will say, well, you know, isn't every crime a hate crime? No, it isn't. And if somebody attacked somebody because they were a Christian, he'd be the first guy out there waving the flag that they should be locked up for the rest of their lives because, you know, Christians have to fight back. Or, you know, if they were beaten because, let's say, they were a conservative or a Republican, you know, he'd be the first guy out there, you know, claiming that, you know, there should be some extra penalty. But, you know, when it's a gay person or a transgender person, well, then, you know, all crimes are hate crimes, which is nonsense. It's bullshit. It implies ignorance. And you know what? Somebody who's been on the air as long as Sean Hannity should know better and should have a better... If you're going to argue against hate crimes, you should at least come up with a better argument than that. Whoa, and I hear a little tweaking of music there. I think Mr. Mike just pushed the wrong button.
Oh, dear me. Oh, my goodness. It's so much fun being here where everything works perfectly.
Hey, always an adventure on the Rebecca Giroux Show. So, you know, I do I agree with everything that John Aravosis happens to say? No. I don't agree with everything that anybody says. I've challenged Marek Easling. I've challenged Ethan St. Pierre, Marty Abernathy, people who are my friends who I agree with on 90%, 95, 99 even. I mean, you know, the whole point is to have the debate, to have the discussion, because that's how you make progress. You know, I mean... Just like I think it's ridiculous to say that you preclude the possibility that the Human Rights Campaign can't finally get it and start working to improve, which I, like I said, this year, I have not seen a single thing from them overtly in the media or anything that I can come out and say they're wrong and this is a problem and they should be called out on this. I haven't been able to see that. And you know, I would be the first one, as I was in 2007, in 2008. I was among the first to call them out when I felt they were wrong. I'm not seeing that. Now, that's not to say that there's stuff, not stuff going on behind closed doors, but I can only go by what I see, by what I hear. And when I see Fred Sains go on Hardball and be the only mainstream figure in who appeared in mainstream media, who at the same time as they're talking about marriage, said, hey, let's not forget that people are still being fired for being gay in 29 states and being trans in 35, that wins points with me. Because you know what? I can't get on Hardball. They're not ringing my phone. I can't get on the Rachel Maddow show. Chances are neither can you. But somebody like Fred Sains just might. He gets on Hardball, and he used that reach to put that figure out there. And that wins credit from me, because he did something with his ability, with his media reach, that we couldn't do for ourselves. That is the definition of advocacy, right there. And that wins points with me. Does that mean I agree with him on everything? Probably not. Does that mean that the Human Rights Campaign should be for all is forgiven? Hell no. They have a lot to prove. But does it win points, and does it get me as a trans person to take notice and to say, hey, kudos for that? Yeah, it does. And I say to you again, as we get ready to wrap this sucker up, I say to you again, if we don't give credit where credit is due, then how credible are we when we call somebody out because they're doing the wrong thing? How credible? I mean, we got to be consistent, gang. You gotta be able to offer praise when it's deserved, just as well as you complain when that's what's deserved. Because that's how you gain credibility, that's how you get people to take you seriously, and that's how you move your issues forward. And that's it, gang. We're done tonight. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting this media. We'll catch you next week. Check out Facebook. We'll let you know who the guest is going to be. Thanks for tuning in. And 5 minutes, we'll see you at the top of the show. Good night, everyone.